greatest country in the world. All right, much more to come on the other side. Ron Rosenbaum, AM 1500, KSTP, St. Paul, Minneapolis at 1 o'clock.
From ABC News. I'm Sherry Preston. Family and friends of the 30 or so people still missing after the Minneapolis bridge collapse are still waiting to hear exactly what happened to their loved ones. Recovery teams are in the water again today trying to recover some of the bodies from the Mississippi River. ABC's Jim Ryan joins us live from Minneapolis.
Sherry, the water where the cars and trucks are submerged is not terribly deep, at around 7 feet. But Police Chief Tim Dolan says the recovery work is tricky.
We're dealing with Mississippi River. We're dealing with currents. And we're going to have to do it slowly and safely.
Less than 18 hours after the disaster, a $5 million federal grant has been released to start the cleanup effort. Sherry?
ABC's Jim Ryan live in Minneapolis. You might have watched some of the TV coverage last night and seen that school bus that just missed falling off the bridge. Jeremy Hernandez was a camp counselor taking about 50 kids home when it happened.
We timed it perfect. If we would have been a little bit faster or a little bit later, we could have either been in the river or crushed by that block of cement.
The governor of Minneapolis is calling for an inspection of all similarly built bridges in his state, but NTSB chairman Mark Rokener says figuring out what went wrong with this structure could take a long time.
We'll do some initial investigation while it is in place at this point, and then decide what we need to do to begin the process of bringing it somewhere to understand what happened.
Meantime, other government officials, including those at the very top, are calling for inspections of bridges all across the country.
We in the federal government must respond and respond robustly to help the people there not only recover, but to make sure that lifeline of activity, that the bridge gets rebuilt as quickly as possible.
President Bush pledging an initial $50 million in immediate aid to rebuild in Minneapolis. Checking the markets at this hour, the Dow is up 49 points and the NASDAQ is up 12. You're listening to ABC News.
Keep on the sunny side.
Stay at Days End and get $300 in discount coupons every time. Play Mystery Hotspot and you could win a dream vacation, plus $10,000 spending money, or instant prizes like GPS systems, digital cameras, and free gas cards. Visit DaysEnd.com today.
Why don't you
the best value under the sun. No purchase necessary. Legal residence 18 or older. Ends 9-6. Free entry details and full rules at daysend.com.
What if you could buy peace of mind? Well, you can with Ford, Lincoln, and Mercury certified pre-owned vehicles. Everyone must pass a 115-point inspection, and it's all backed by our 6-year, 75,000-mile warranty coverage. That's peace of mind. Now get 3.9% APR on select Ford or Mercury certified pre-owned vehicles. That's just 3.9%. Not all buyers qualify for Ford credit financing. Offer ends 9/30/07. See dealer for limited warranty details or visit FordCPO.com.
Sunny and 84 degrees in Minneapolis and St. Paul, 4 a.m. 1500 KSTP News. I'm John Hite. The chairman of the NTSB says the first step of the federal investigation into the Minneapolis bridge collapse will be to recover pieces of the bridge and reassemble them, like he, in his words, like a jigsaw puzzle. Investigators also want to review video of the collapse and are setting up a phone number for witnesses to call with information. With the collapse of the bridge, Metro Transit picking up some of the slack to try to help out commuters. Six park and rides in the North Metro are seeing 25 extra buses pressed into service. Is Bob Gibbons with Metro Transit.
I think it's important to consider sharing the ride today and into the future, whether it's a carpool or a transit bus, because of the obvious congestion we're all going to face.
Those six sites are Foley Boulevard in Coon Rapids, Northtown Shopping Center in Blaine, Maplewood Mall, Rosedale Shopping Center, Roseville City Hall, and at 63rd Avenue and 81 in Brooklyn Center. Gibbons, a guest this morning with Willie Clark and Jay Coles here on AM 1500. U.S. Transportation Secretary Mary Peterson was in the That was in the Twin Cities this morning. She pledged her department's help in trying to get things back to normal.
Today, I am making an initial distribution of $5 million from the department. This money will be available today to help restore the traffic flow, to clear the debris, to set up detours, and to begin the repair work.
The death count right now stands at 4, but officials say they expect that to go much higher. They say there are bodies in cars in the river. Recovery teams went out again about 10:45 this morning. They had to wait until engineers said the remaining bridge work was safe in that area. Five Eyewitness News weather forecast, 87 today, clear overnight down to 64. 84. Tomorrow, sunny and 86. Right now, it is sunny and 84. Let's take a look at traffic right now with Carolyn Peterson.
Thank you, John. MnDOT has converted Highway 280 to a temporary freeway. No traffic signals. Broadway Avenue and County Road B are no longer, you are no longer able to access the highway from Broadway and County Road B. And those lights at these intersections are going to stay green on the highway until 280 is no longer deemed an alternate. Again, 280 both directions, a temporary freeway. The intersections have basically been eliminated. One of the main alternates for folks, South 35W to West 694 to East 94 to head into downtown Minneapolis. Another obvious alternate for you today would be East 694 over to South 35E, pick up West 94 in downtown St. Paul and take that over to Minneapolis. You are listening to continuing coverage of the 35W bridge disaster on AM 1500 KSTP. Now back to Ron Rosenbaum.
The next thing I saw was the roll kind of wave, like in a wave, and we were going head down. I just was hoping that I wouldn't get hurt when we hit because we were like going straight down. I just couldn't believe it that we can walk out of there like just with minor scratches because our car is like total.
It's amazing the way people survive things that you would not have thought they would have survived, but they did, thank God. 106. Ron Rosenbaum in for Tommy Mischke. I think Jason Tommy will be back tomorrow. 646-TALK, 646-825-5187. 615-1500. There really is only one, I mean, one, not only one story here. I mean, this is the, all the cable talks last night went live and I think stayed with the story. All of our local media went immediately and stayed with it. You know, and everybody hates the media. Everybody rips them all the time. But I got to tell you, I was flipping stations last night, and I thought they did an outstanding job. I really do. I mean, listen, it goes without saying that the firemen, the police, the Dr. Joseph Clinton and his crew at HCMC, North Memorial, all these people, and the pedestrians and the civilians, everybody, as you would expect them to do in the state of Minnesota, really rose to the occasion. It may sound overly confident, but that is really what Minnesotans do. It's what they've always done, and God willing, it's what they will always do. But I think the media did a pretty good job. I mean, they weren't full of themselves. They stayed with the story, and quite frankly, nobody really knew what was going on for a long time, and I don't think we got a lot of worthless, stupid prognosticating. People followed the story where it went, and I don't know about you, but I thought they did a great job. Jason, we have Tom Hauser. Can you lock him in for me? And Tom, are you with us?
I am, Ron.
Tom of 5 Eyewitness News. Tom is a political reporter, also covers all kinds of other things. Tom, you were at the press conference today?
Yes, I was. I've been at a number of press conferences, but you mean the one with the senators and governor and...
Yeah, the
and
first CSB. Big one.
Yeah, yes.
It's not a story, really, that I don't know anybody's mentioned. I suppose it's sacrilegious so close to this disaster to talk about the political implications, but there are political implications. I mean, I don't want to sound like a cynic, but of course I am one. These politicians have learned their lesson, I think, from Katrina and other places. I mean, when we talked to Amy and Norm Coleman, Senator Coleman, Senator Klobuchar, earlier today, and I mean, they hopped on planes as quick as they could to get back here, right?
Oh, yes. They left on planes at 5:30 this morning.
Mm-hmm. Tom, are there political implications for this story? I have to confess, I had not really ever really thought of the way an interstate highway, I mean, this is part of the federal interstate system, but it's a local bridge, and at least as I understand it, I think it was Senator Klobuchar, the feds set the guidelines, but the state has the responsibility of overseeing. And again, I'm a little confused, but there's a front page story that says the bridge was rated structurally deficient. I've got to believe that MnDOT and Governor Pawlenty are concerned that it's going to look like they dropped the ball.
Yeah, and, you know, nobody wants to have something like this happen on their watch, because even if you are not responsible, there are going to be people who are going to point the finger. But, you know, this this bridge was built in 1967, so it's 40 years old. It's getting toward middle age, and it's not supposed to just fall down.
Mm-hmm.
And something happened. It obviously is not a case where you can say that in the last 3 or 4 years necessarily, or 6 years, whatever it's been since Pawlenty's been governor, they've just stopped looking at this bridge, and therefore, you know, it fell down. Obviously, this is something catastrophic, something that is probably a total anomaly, but until they know, Governor Pawlenty's going to have the finger pointed at him, because mm-hmm. he just fought a very tough battle at the state capitol against raising the gas tax and some other taxes in order to pay for transportation, including highways and light rail and that type of thing. So the Democrats, even though right now they're all being very bipartisan, pulling together, you know that within a couple of days, the gloves are going to come off.
Yeah, and that's why I know it sounds sacrilegious, but all I'm doing is jumping the gun by a day or two. I may be throwing you a curveball here, but I talked to McNaney. He confirmed that he had heard the same thing. This particular bridge lacked, I guess, what they call redundancies. I've heard that term used in passenger jets, where if one system fails, another will back up. But apparently it's confirmed that this particular bridge is one of only a couple, I don't know if it's in the whole country, maybe one of our listeners knows, or in the area, that if one part of the bridge goes, the whole bridge goes, which is not the way they build them anymore. Do you know anything about that, Tom?
I don't know a lot about that. What I do know is that an inspection report that has been cited by everybody from the White House to members of Congress today from 2005 showed that this bridge scored a 50 out of 120 on a test for structural integrity. Now, that sounds horrible. You know, if you're in high school, that would be a failing grade, and you would expect the bridge, you would think, to fall down. But I'm not sure exactly how this grade is applied and what it applies to, but the U.S. Transportation Secretary, Mary Peters, is here, and she said that's not unusual. In fact, and this was a little frightening, about 40% of the bridges in this country fall into that category.
But yeah, well, I'm not sure that's encouraging, is it?
Well, but she says that 50 out of 120 does not mean the bridge is obsolete and is in danger of falling down. It just means it needs to be put in the rotation for significant repairs and upgrading or outright replacement. But what they can't answer at this point, and that's why the NTSB is here, is why this bridge with a grade like that just fell down. And Amy Klobuchar has made her stock line since she's been back here. Bridges in America are not supposed to just fall down.
And well, you know, I hate to say it. I was going
to
say, I mean, if they are, we're even in more trouble than I thought we were. But, I mean, Tom, I think there are going to be political implications. And let me ask you a question, which a couple of people have posed to me. Does this affect, is it possible that this could affect the Republican National Convention coming here? Because, I mean, today, you know, maybe we're singing Kumbaya on the highways. I think a lot of people are on vacation. We're getting into the dog days. A lot of people probably didn't go to work today because they wanted to see what it's like. But the University of Minnesota is going to reopen. The world is going to come back to reality come after Labor Day, and we're going to have, I think, monumental traffic jams, and that tends to make people angry.
Yeah, it does, but I would be very surprised if we were to lose the Republican National Convention. A couple of factors, I think, work against that scenario. The convention, the bulk of the convention, the main event, is being held at the Xcel Energy Center in St. Paul. Granted, there's a lot of events over here in Minneapolis, especially downtown Minneapolis, the convention center, and places like that, but we have, 13 months to figure that out. And the ball got rolling on adjusting our traffic patterns with a $5 million grant offered by the Bush administration today to help with the debris cleanup and also to start the work on alternative routing, I think is how they term it. In other words, the work they've already done temporarily on 280 to kind of turn it into a de facto freeway for a while. We've got some seed money to do more of that, and much more money will be on the way to try to help mitigate the loss of this major artery. I mean, it's one of the busiest bridges in the metropolitan area. but they have ways they're going to try to work around it. It's going to be an inconvenience, but I don't think it would be enough to keep a convention that lasts 4 days from coming here. It would almost be like adding insult to injury if they were to take it away.
You certainly have a point there. I'm less confident than you are, however. I mean, alternatives and alternatives are alternatives. I see what 280 prior to this bridge being closed looked like at 4:30 or 5 in the afternoon. I mean, it looks like a parking lot regularly. Now it's going to carry, I don't know what multiple times that it already does in terms of traffic, but, unless they figured out a new way to put in a freeway, I think our people who are coming from the Roseville area, Arden Hills, that need to get to places like Richfield, I don't know how they're going to do it, Tom.
Yeah, well, let me give you a taste of what 280 is going to be like, because I was among the first to get a taste of it. Last night when I came into the station around 11 o'clock, I was able to skate through, you know, Interstate 94 all the way to the 280 exit. I get off on the 280 exit thinking I'm going to make that, you know, quick left turn that you've made many times, mm-hmm. and you're off to the right up to University,
yeah.
and there you are at KSTP. Well, the exit to University Avenue was closed.
There you go.
And I thought, well, that's odd. Well, I'll just go down to, you know, Energy Park Drive. And
yeah,
go a little further.
Good luck.
Well, it's closed.
Yeah.
And I go a little further. Broadway is closed. They're all closed because they've turned it into a freeway, and they don't want people getting off on those exit ramps, hitting a stoplight, and then backing traffic up all the way onto the...
So how do people who get on there... I mean, you know, there's a lot of people who enter... Now, like you, I mean, if I'm in that part of town, I shoot down 280, bear to the left, and then get off on University. But what if you're, you know, you live near Broadway and you need to go south and you're used to getting on 280? How do you get on it? Get on it?
You were like me. I could see the station from where I was, but I had to go by it. I ended up getting routed all the way to Highway 36. Over to the Cleveland Avenue South exit, took that all the way through the St. Paul campus of the U of M,
yeah.
came over on Raymond and snaked my way through. It was an incredible inconvenience, and that was just me in the middle of the night. That's not thousands of commuters trying to get home from work or trying to get home.
Yeah. Hey, Tom, can you stick with us for a minute? Jason, we
yeah,
want to do
a
trip.
I can hang out with you. Yep.
All right, good. We're talking with Tom Hauser now at 117. We don't regularly do this, but partially piggybacking what Tom and I were talking about. We're going to have monumental traffic problems, so we go to Carolyn. We're going to do it four times an hour for
mm-hmm.
you. Probably later during Joe's show, during rush hour, but now we go to Carolyn Peterson with a traffic update.
Well, it looks like the reports of lights not working at Snelling and 94, really a big headache for motorists there. At least a half an hour to get across 94 on Snelling because those traffic lights are out. You may want to avoid that and choose an alternate. Now, how are the other freeways faring this afternoon? Eastbound 94 from the Lowry Hill Tunnel to 35E is 14 minutes. Westbound 12 minutes from 35E to the tunnel. And both directions of 694, 35W to 35E, averaging about 6 minutes. 35E northbound between 494 to 94 is 10 minutes. And from 94 to 694, that is 7 minutes. Northbound and southbound, 35W closed due to the bridge collapse. Northbound traffic, the detour is 94 eastbound to 280. Southbound traffic, the detour is 280 to 94 westbound.
Carolyn, does it mm-hmm. go all the way back like to Rose? Where is it that they closed off 35 if you're coming
right in
south?
The 36 Commons with 280. You can still take the Industrial Boulevard, Stinson Boulevard exit, New Brighton Boulevard.
Mm.
And past that, it's shut down.
Yeah, okay.
So that is how we are faring right now. We are continuing with our traffic coverage throughout the afternoon. Kenny will be back after 3 o'clock this afternoon. I'm Carolyn Peterson on AM 1500 KSTP.
Please stay tuned to the following public announcement. The government and private banks are liquidating houses now. These houses have been foreclosed, confiscated, or repossessed, and will be sold. Homes may be sold for very little money down. For a list of foreclosures, call 800-339-1237. All listeners whose last name begins with the letter A through N are allowed to start calling now. Listeners whose last name begins with O through Z can begin calling tomorrow, 9 a.m. Every house must be sold. The government and banks are very motivated to sell these homes quickly, so listings may not always remain available in all areas. So act now. I repeat, this is a public announcement. All listeners whose last name begins with the letter A through N can start calling now. Listeners whose last name begins with O through Z can begin calling tomorrow, 9 a.m. Call CRN's national toll-free hotline for your foreclosure list at 800-339-1237. That's 800-339-1237.
One of the worst jobs in the world is sealing your deck. Picture the scorching sun. You got to sit there and seal your deck. You try to put it off every other year. It doesn't always work that way. You might call over your brother-in-law, hey, come on over for beer and pizza and help me seal my deck. He doesn't always go for it either. Why don't you try Seal Max? They'll go for it, and they don't need beer, and they don't need pizza. They'll do it in a day, pick up the telephone, and get on their schedule. Before the big party, they will seal the deck. They'll also seal the dock at your lake home, your cabin, wherever. 888-668-6447. Let them sit out there in the scorching sun. They're happy to do it because they realize with the 25-year guarantee on their product, they're happy and you're happy. So pick up the phone, 888-668-6447. It's called Seal Max. When superior performance and appearance are your only option, call Seal Max, S-E-A-L-M-A-X-X, 888-668-6447.
Build a better mousetrap and the world will beat a path to your door. Remember when we lived our lives with that wonderful philosophy? This is Ron Trzynski of the Original Mattress Factory. As a nation, we built our economy on that concept. Always try to make it better. We demanded quality, not junk. Make it better. Make it stronger. Make it more attractive. Our products constantly improved. We were the envy of the entire world. We never stopped reaching for the stars. That's the spirit that put a man on the moon while the rest of the world watched in awe. But then, for some companies, the rules changed. Cut some corners. Make it cheaper. It doesn't have to last. The race was on. Only they were going in the wrong direction. Forget quality. Forget value. It's the bottom line that counts. It has become a race to the bottom. At the Original Mattress Factory, we choose not to run. We keep our prices low and our quality and value high. The Original Mattress Factory on Highway 36 at English Street in Maplewood.
The Talk Station, AM 1500 KSTP.
This bridge was undergoing a rehabilitation, what they call a deck rehabilitation, and they had ground the pavement off and jackhammered some of the bad concrete out, and they were in the process of what they call putting a concrete overlay on it.
122, Ron Rosenbaum, AM 1500 KSTP, in for Tommy Mischke. I believe Tommy will be back tomorrow, 646-825-5187-7615-1500. As I said, there really is only one story in town, and not just a national story, really an international story. Everybody has been on top of it. We're trying to cover as many angles. Jason is Tommy's producer, trying as hard as we can. We have some indication we may be successful. Hopefully we will. We're trying to get a structural engineer.
I actually just heard back from them,
yes.
And the original guy that we were going for is not available, but one of his colleagues is, and will be calling me very soon.
Okay, good. All right, so we're trying to get to the bottom of... should I take Tom again on the bottom?
Yeah, you can take him on the top.
Tom Hauser, 5 Eyewitness News, is finishing up with us as well. Tom, before we let you go, put on your long-term eyeglasses here. Is there going to be a political fallout in this story?
Yeah, there will be, just like there was after 9/11. You know, the first few days it was all kumbaya, let's all get along, be bipartisan. And, you know, within weeks partisan rancor that continues to this day. It will happen in this case, but in a lot of cases that's healthy. We got to debate what to do about our infrastructure.
Yeah.
And that's a good thing. And I want to warn you, I think I hear beeps on my phone that indicate my battery is about to die. Can I tell you one quick story about
sure.
this morning, talking about the national coverage?
Yeah.
I was standing doing my live shots this morning next to Matt Lauer, Katie Couric, Brian Williams, and Chris Cuomo from Good Morning America.
They were all here?
they were all here standing at 35E and University.
Jeez, I didn't realize the national media came in for this thing.
Charlie Gibson will be at our live truck here in about 15 minutes.
Well, get their autographs for me. I've always been very excited when I get to see national newsmen, Tom.
Well, I wish they could be here under better circumstances.
I understand. Good talking to you. Thanks for the time.
All right, Ron. Anytime.
Yeah, thank you. Tom Hauser, 5 Eyewitness News. I was doing other stuff this morning. I had not realized that every national media person flew in so they can stand next to our little disaster here, probably. I don't know. I mean, I really don't know how long this story will be national news, but I can tell you one thing. It's going to be local news for years, and like Tom, I tend to think that there will be fallout. I want to, I don't know, if there's anybody out there listening that was there last night, I'd love to talk to what regular bystanders saw. I actually called a friend of mine who lives on the river as soon as I saw this thing. Very interesting. She was in her house. She overlooks the river. She didn't know about this, but she indicated to me that she had heard two loud crashes. Now, I don't know exactly what those crashes were, whether the concrete coming down, whatever. I assume that it was related to this, and I guess like all of us, she was shocked when she looked out the window and saw the carnage. And I think that when you see it up close, which I have not done, but I've seen some of the pictures up close, you really get a better idea of the horror. You get even a better idea with the cut that we played earlier, which is a part of the story that I had not been aware of, that apparently the police were, or police or other responders, I assume it was the police, were with people who were literally pinned and or trapped and dying. And the police, and this is an act of heroism, handed them telephones, cell phones, and apparently they said their last goodbyes. That's the brutality of the story that at least I didn't see on television last night. But somebody that I did hear on television, FM 107's own Ian Punnett, really did an outstanding job. I made a mistake. I described him as an ordained minister. He's a minister who's not yet ordained. I'm not of the faith, so I really can't tell you the difference of that. But
Ian, you know, just a matter of it's like sacramental stuff. I can preach, but I can't do the sacraments. That's about it.
Well, somehow or another, you wound up in the middle of everything.
Sure.
Last night. Any real stories that sort of touched your heart that you got to see or hear, Ian?
Well, you know, you talked a lot. I heard your discussion with Allison Triarcy, and there was one of those stories that I was with her while she was gathering, and that was the story of Melissa Hughes with her baby Olivia, which was not in her car seat, in her back seat. But there were other stories about...
Wait, before I let you go, you say she wasn't... Tell us what would have happened had she been.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, the car that had flipped over on top of Melissa's car as it was sliding backward crushed the back window and landed on her trunk in the lower part of her roof. And it would have at very least, it would have given a high trauma impact to that car seat area. The baby happens to be very small. It's a newborn, so maybe it wouldn't have perished from the actual... truck itself, but it would have been showered in glass.
Yeah.
I mean, all of that glass would have gone right down on top of that poor little baby. So, I mean, there's all of those stories of what could have been, but what wasn't. And then you're starting to hear the stories of the people on the phone. I didn't hear whether Allison was talking to you about them or not, but I was hearing somebody else talk about it downstairs in the newsroom about the number of people now who have been on, who are being identified to investigators as having been on the phone and noticing that something was going wrong with the bridge as they were driving over it, making some sort of exclamation and then disappearing off the radar.
How close were you to the actual river? Could you see the cars in the river?
Sure. Yep. Yep, we could see from where we were, we could see one end of the disaster, and then we could see the sort of, it sort of rippled up, especially as night fell, it had this sort of eerie feel of shadows as they were casting these big lights on it. But we couldn't see like we couldn't make out the make or the model of cars, but you could see, not from where I was standing, but from another vantage point when I moved, you could see the colors of some of the roofs that were in the water.
Ian, any idea, your best guess, if you can, I don't want to put you on the spot, what number of vehicles they might pull out of the river?
Yeah, a lot less than if they hadn't been doing the construction, that's for sure. You know what? I thought it was interesting. I was listening to you earlier, and you were talking with Bob McNaney, and I think that that's, you know, that's a number that we're all just kind of pulling out of the air. But it is good news that they're reducing the number of cars that they think are actually in the river. They've analyzed it. They've been looking at helicopters. And for it to go down to, say, 30, if they think it's as low as 30, and they know they've got 10 people out alive with the EMTs, and then there's maybe a half a dozen more that got out on their own, then that does say that will be nearly miraculous in terms of what the death toll could have been.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking is when a major interstate, this isn't just a bridge, it's an interstate highway, in rush hour, bumper to bumper, literally falls apart. And I mean, I hate to say, you know, a lower death toll is good, but it's certainly a lower death toll is a lot better than it could have been.
Well, I mean, look, do the math. I mean, the bridge span itself isn't that long, which is good. As Bob said, if the river had been as high as it ordinarily is, maybe spring or fall, there would have been a lot more water that these cars would have fallen into.
Mm-hmm.
You count the number of cars that are up on the bridge. How many? What's the typical at moving 15 miles an hour over the bridge? How many cars would we be talking about maximum that would have been on the bridge from beginning to end? How many can we count that are still visible? And then, you know, minus the number of what should have been with what we can see, and you get a better idea of what's in the water.
Well, yeah, but the part that's amazing to me is like this Melissa Hughes. I mean, the fact that she didn't get killed. I mean, a number of people said they don't know how they didn't die. And some of them just had literally minor scratches on their head. Ian, I got to run to the news. We're very grateful for you giving us the time. And thanks for outstanding work last night, by the way.
And it's interesting to see the number of people that are still flocking to the area. Gold Medal Park would be my recommendation if people are looking for a place to overlook, to stay out of the way of investigators, to stay out of the way of traffic. Get yourself a nice parking space at that new Guthrie Theater parking pavilion and walk over to Gold Medal Park.
All right. Excellent advice, Ian. Thank you again.
Okay.
That's Ian Punnett, FM 107. You can hear him every morning. I am Ron Rosenbaum, AM 1500. KSTP, do you want to go to Carolyn Peterson first, Jason?
No, I'd rather not.
I've always preferred Carolyn Peterson to John Hite, but apparently I don't have any choice. Ouch.
I'm stuck in traffic right now. I gotta let John Hite have the.
All right, we'll go to John Hite in the KSTP newsroom.
Thank you, Ron. I think it's sunny and it's it's 85 degrees. Recovery crews are out looking for bodies in the Mississippi River today after the collapse of the 35W bridge yesterday. Right now, four people are confirmed dead. Officials expect more bodies will be found today. Some folks sharing their stories about the collapse of the bridge. One man, Dave, was driving northbound when part of the bridge collapsed. He was on the bridge. He ended up okay and was able to get out of his car, but he says he felt helpless after he got out of that car.
On the northbound side, all of those cars were gone. There wasn't anybody there. There were already people. We ran over to the south side where it's fallen in just a little bit. There's half a dozen cars there, plus all the oncoming traffic had stopped. There were people all running around over there helping out all of those cars, but there wasn't anything we could do. We couldn't really get to anybody to help. They were back up at the as far as you could go, getting more of the construction guys off of the bridge, and then it's like, what can I do?
Dave says, oddly enough, he couldn't see much in the water right after the collapse.
I was looking for anything going on in the water while I was standing there, and I couldn't see any vehicles. I couldn't see any activity down there or anything. It was kind of weird. I would have assumed you'd see some cars or something maybe floating downriver or something. I didn't see anything in the river from where I was.
Dave Agast with Willie Clark and Jay Coles this morning here on AM 1500. The president spoke about the 35W tragedy today at the White House. He says it was talked about during a cabinet meeting this morning.
We talked about the fact that the bridge collapsed, and that we in the federal government must respond and respond robustly to help the people there not only recover, but to make sure that lifeline of activity, that bridge gets rebuilt as quickly as possible.
President says he talked with Minneapolis Mayor R.T. Ryback this morning and with Governor Tim Pawlenty.
I told them we would help with rescue efforts, but also told them how much we are in prayer for those who suffered. And I thank my fellow citizens for holding up those who are suffering right now in prayer.
Governor Pawlenty today ordered an immediate inspection of all bridges that have a design like the 35W bridge. Already questions have been raised about the structural integrity of the bridge that collapsed. 5 Eyewitness News weather forecast clear, 64 overnight tonight, sunny and 86 tomorrow, right now 85. That's news. Now for a check of traffic, here's Carolyn Peterson.
And this is how the bridge collapse has affected our road system in Minneapolis. The following roads are closed. West River Parkway between 13th Avenue South and 1st Street South, that's the south side of the river. 2nd Street Southeast between 8th Avenue Southeast and 11th Avenue Southeast, the north side of the river. Also closed is the 10th Avenue Bridge between University and 2nd Street South. That's the bridge that runs parallel to 35W. Broadway Street Northeast in both directions at 280 is also closed. Speaking of 280, they have turned all the lights to green for those heading north and south. That is to make it easier for traffic to flow freely. Broadway Avenue, County Road B, no longer have access to the highway in the, for the next probably several months, could be a couple of years at this point. It's too early to say. I am Carolyn Peterson, and we are keeping an eye on the traffic, offering continuing coverage of the 35W bridge disaster on AM 1500 KSTP. Ron Rosenbaum coming up next.
I am Ron Rosenbaum, sitting in for Tommy Mischke. It's 136. 646-825-5187-761-5-1500. We continue with really the only story in town. Obviously, people have other stories, but this is a monstrous story, a major disaster, and we are trying to cover it from every single angle. We are trying, not so easy to do today, to get a structural engineer. I have some questions that I want to ask about the so-called lack of redundancies on this bridge. But now it's kind of odd to actually go to, we often talk to Aaron Katursky covering stories in other towns. Aaron of ABC News is covering our town. Jason, we'll take him on the top. Aaron, are you with us?
Ron, good afternoon.
How you doing? Welcome
to... this is it's a fascinating story, and it is really unfolded as a national tragedy because this has had some pretty serious ramifications. Here we are less than 24 hours later, and already there have been calls in Congress to inspect the entire infrastructure system of the United States, which could take an estimated $1 or 2 trillion. We've had the President of the United States come on and talk a little bit about rebuilding this bridge and asking the nation to join in thoughts for Minnesotans. And then, of course, you've had the American Society for Civil Engineers say that this should remind all of us that, you know, bridges and anything else, they really routinely need to be checked.
Well, that's great for us to hear. I don't have much to do with inspecting bridges. I assume you don't either. What's troubling about this story, Aaron, is, you know, I live in St. Paul, Minnesota. I never imagined that in St. Paul, Minnesota, a major bridge would just fall down. And now I find out that, and again, I don't really fully understand what it means, but this thing was rated structurally deficient in 2005. Well, some politicians say, well, ignore that. That doesn't mean, you know, it was in danger of falling down. I can't believe structurally deficient is good news, is it? Now we find out 40,000 some bridges around the country are in that shape. How does this play out?
Well, this is going to be, I think, part of the argument. For some, it is an argument that has taken on political overtones. I'm sure you'll be shocked to know in Washington that this is a consequence of the continued focus on terrorism, that the infrastructure of the homeland has been ignored. That's one thought. But others are saying that this is a significant reminder that the nation's infrastructure is old. You know, I live in New York City, and we just saw the other week an 83-year-old steam pipe explode, and that had deadly consequences. I mean, certainly not on this scale, but there are little reminders every now and again that we have to pay attention to the things that we ordinarily take for granted. But I think Senator Klobuchar today echoed the thoughts of many that I've met here, and that is, how does this happen? What is this about? For 40 years, reliably, people here have been crossing this bridge. It's part of the topography, and all of a sudden, it's just a gap.
Well, the other piece of that is, this isn't, you know, I mean, I live in St. Paul. There's the Ford Bridge. The Ford Bridge is really a nice, beautiful, it goes over the same river, obviously, just a little bit farther south. It's a very pretty bridge. It's just recently been redone. This is a federal interstate highway, for God's sakes. It carries 150 to 200,000 cars a day. At least that's what I'm told. You would think that this would be the last kind of bridge that would fall in. But, it, I mean, Aaron, it's got to raise questions all over the country.
Well, it has already raised a question in Governor Pawlenty's mind, who is saying now, let's inspect every bridge in the state that is designed like this one. We know the governor of New Jersey today issued a similar call to inspect his state's 6,000 bridges. I mean, if nothing else, this may serve as a wake-up call that some are saying it should. But, you know, as you say, Ron, for people who live here, you know, this is now just going to be something that they live with. Not only the memory of how we know of four and we know more died, but also, you know, the kind of mess that's going to be around here for a while.
Aaron, you mentioned you live in New York City. I saw a lot of pictures. In fact, there was obviously some amount of panic initially that this was a terrorist attack in New York. You've seen this site. How does this compare, at least visually, to you?
Oh, this is stunning. It is really, I don't know, to me, bridges have kind of this almost romantic feel about them, and especially living in New York City, where there are, you know, bridges all over the place. And but this one particularly was pretty. It was well used. It was important. And it had, you know, it had stature. Bridges have stature. And especially this one with its design and its uniqueness. And then to see it crumble, really. Yeah. And then you have some of it shredded and cars kind of hanging over the edge. And then some pieces of concrete are bent over just like they're paper. And then you have sort of the remnants in the water. It's horrifying to look at. And then to hear the stories of how it all went down. If it took 3 seconds, that would seem like a long time based on some of the closed-circuit surveillance video that I've seen.
Yeah, I haven't seen the video. Well, describe that video. I haven't seen it, but it apparently went very fast.
Well, it did, according to the Army Corps of Engineers, which had a camera trained on the bridge. And you know, you count down the time, and, man, if it took 3 seconds, that would seem like a long time. But it is 1 second there's a bridge, and then in the next instant, it's gone.
Yeah, it's, you know, again, I live here. It's a shocking thing. I haven't seen it yet with my own eyes, but, you know, I've been over that bridge. I went to the University of Minnesota. I've probably been over that bridge 27,000, and you can talk to any Minnesotan. I mean, probably in New York there are people who use one bridge. They may use a Brooklyn Bridge. They may use the Cross Bronx Expressway. Maybe they use the Manhattan Bridge, but everybody uses this bridge. this is a major connecting area from north to south in Minnesota and part of the interstate highway system. And, you know, you kind of, it's similar to 9/11 to me in a way, in that if that can happen, anything can happen. If a bridge with that kind of traffic can just fall down in Minnesota, you know, I think anything can happen.
Well, I think a lot of people are echoing your feeling, Ron, and just kind of makes sense of it all. I mean, there is at once this horrific aspect to what went on, and just the harrowing moments of when it happened, and now the unspeakable tragedy of the death and the way that these people died, trapped under submerged cars and debris. It's truly horrifying.
What story have you... I'm sorry, go ahead. I interrupted you.
I was just going to say, and you balance that then with you know, the very practical matter that you talk about is just this piece of infrastructure that you take for granted every time you go over it. It's interesting how a bridge brings up a whole range of emotions.
Well, not to mention, I mean, you live in Manhattan. Manhattan has got a traffic system, I think it's fair to say, is out of control. I mean, if you're going east and west in Manhattan, good luck. It's bad enough north and south, but if you've got to go from one side of the island to the other, it's a disaster. But we're beginning to rival you, and now with this thing, I don't know what they're telling you, but I don't care what they're telling you. I would be surprised if this thing gets cleared up and a new bridge gets built. 2 years would be fast. I think we're probably more like three or four. It's going to cause monumental traffic problems. And, you know, I mean, we're not used to it the way Manhattan is.
Well, you know, and I think that that's even still, you know, you look at this and it's still shocking to look at when you just sort of see the seeming ease with which this piece of infrastructure yeah. fell. But, you know, hopefully answers to come in the in the coming days.
Well, Aaron, listen, welcome to town. I wish it could have been in other circumstances, but we certainly appreciate you giving us the time, Aaron Katursky of ABC News.
Thanks very much, Ron.
Thank you. Yeah, our pleasure. All right, are we ready?
Yep, Carolyn.
I don't like to go to Carolyn Peterson until she's dissected all the maps and looked at all the the whole traffic system.
Analyzed it.
Thought about it. Get ready to give our listen. I'm kidding, but
you know
for
what?
People in Minnesota right now, traffic is about
deal.
As important as anything else. So now we're going to give you traffic four times an hour. I presume as the afternoon goes on, we'll do it even more often. Probably Kenny will be back by now.
That's right. Kenny will be in after three. But, you know, okay. Ron, everything is basically kind of stayed the same. We have seen a lot of folks just staying home, change their schedules today. It'll be different tomorrow. And every day from here on out, it'll be different. And it'll probably get a lot worse. But we got off to a good start. Start, considering the circumstances early on, but some of this information we'll just have to have it memorized because
let me make sure I can understand this. I certainly applaud the people who are dealing with this issue and turning 280 into a freeway. I mean, I think they really have no choice, but that presents another set of problems. Where can you get on and where can you get off? Because
on
I presume, yeah, you can't get on in half the places you could and you can't get off, right?
You would get on 280 from 94.
Well, that's one place, but
right.
there's all kinds of other entrances and exits on 280.
Basically, you would have to plan your trip out that if you would have taken 35W northbound, you know, south of downtown to north of downtown, you would have to plan your trip out, you know, if I need to get off anywhere before that, you know, I'll take the exits that are still open. But if I'm just going to head up north towards Forest Lake, then you're going to take the 280 detour.
Right.
And they've done a great job of making all the lights green, shutting down some of the, what is it, Broadway and County Road B. So they're no longer intersections. Yes, it's obviously going to be inconvenient for the folks in that area. But I think this is probably the most logical way to
do it. Oh, absolutely. I mean, you got to have some north-south route.
Right. And these are things that we're going to have memorized because a lot of us do not take 35W every day northbound or southbound, what have you. But most of us will run into this situation in the next couple of years. And these are things that we're going to have to keep in mind. And that is to bypass the closure. If you're heading north on 35W, take East 94 to North 280 to North 35W. West 94 to East 694 to 35W. That's another bypass. Now, if you're heading south, you take South 280 to West 94, South 35W to West 694 to East 94. Don't be afraid to use 35E as well. You can take that to West 94 and get into downtown Minneapolis as well. And I hope, you know, I think it right now it sounds very confusing. It's, you know, you almost have to take out a map and memorize, but it's the most logical of the alternates that are out there. And Kenny will update us this afternoon on how it's impacting our afternoon ride home. But for now, the most congestion we're seeing is on the south end of 494 in the Bloomington area, which is very typical elsewhere. Speeds are pretty much up to speed. Traffic is up to speed and looking pretty good. And we are continuing the coverage of the 35W bridge disaster right here on AM 1500 KSTP.
We're talking with Paul Dow from Timeshares Only. Paul, I hear you've just come out with this great new kit that you're giving away?
Yeah, it's called The Top 10 Secrets to Buying and Selling Timeshares, and it's just a phenomenal resource for anybody looking to sell their timeshare.
Well, tell us about it.
Well, first of all, it tells you what your timeshare is really worth.
Uh-huh.
And more importantly, how to sell it for top dollar. Well, there are thousands of people out there just waiting to buy your timeshare, but you sort of need to learn the secrets to getting the most cash for it.
And the kit is free.
Yes, but it's only a limited time offer, so you need to call our toll-free number now, and we'll rush it right out.
Well, sounds like a pretty sweet thing for really anybody who owns a timeshare.
It really is. It could make you thousands of dollars.
Well, okay, the top 10 secrets to buying and selling timeshares. Here's the phone number to call. It's 1-800-396-3884. Again, that's 1-800-396-3884. 1-800-396-3884.
There are natural cures for virtually every disease, including diabetes, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, acid reflux, chronic pain, even herpes. I'm Donald Barrett, founder of ITV, and I just bought the book Natural Cures They Don't Want You to Know About. I was so impressed to learn the natural, inexpensive cures that are being suppressed by drug companies that I bought over a million copies of this book, and I'm giving them away. That's right, get your hardcover edition, a $30 value, absolutely free. Just call 1-800-270-1784. That's 1-800-270-1784. And get your free copy of Natural Cures They Don't Want You to Know About, absolutely free. There are natural cures, and they're being hidden from you. Call 1-800-270-1784.
At Cub, we've been bringing more to your table since 1968, and this week we're bringing a really juicy deal to the table of Dana Cook in Zimmerman.
Hey, thanks for coming. Welcome to our house.
Dana, this week at Cub, you can get delicious, whole, seeded, or seedless watermelon for only $3.48 each. These are the freshest, sweetest, juiciest watermelons we could get our hands on, and now through Saturday, they're only $3.48.
That's fantastic.
So how many kids do you have, Dana?
We have 9.
That's got to be a lot of groceries.
We go through about 12 gallons of milk a week. We can eat a watermelon in a single sitting.
$3.48 for a whole watermelon. I mean,
the lowest I've seen yet.
Do you ever carve your watermelon into shapes?
They just eat it so fast, it's not worth it.
It's in the shape of gone.
It just gets crazy, but it's a lot of fun.
Sweet, juicy, delicious, whole-seeded or seedless watermelon for just $3.48 each. Limit one. Now through Saturday at all Twin Cities Cub stores. And don't forget to save even more on gas. Now you can use up to 3 Cub gas coupons at once and save up to 90 cents a gallon at any Twin Cities holiday store. Offer good now through September 8th. See store for details. Cub, bringing more to your table.
Man, these GPS navigation systems are great.
Turn left in 500 feet.
Tim Tim, should I turn around at the next on-ramp?
Turn left in 300 feet.
Tim Tim, have I missed the turn?
Will you quit interrupting me?
Sorry.
I'm trying to tell you that after you launch your boat, you should put on your life jacket and keep it on the whole time you are on the water.
But I'm a good swimmer. I don't need a life jacket.
Good swimmers drown in boating accidents every year. The sudden gas that occurs when you fall into the water can cause you to breathe in water and drown unless you are wearing a life jacket.
Tim Tim, should I use minnows or a crankbait?
Maybe you should just go back home and mow the lawn.
Sponsored by the Minnesota DNR.
The Talk Station, AM 1500 KSTP.
They're seeing things that cause them to rate the bridge structural members at a rating of 4 out of 9, where 1 is the lowest and 9 is the highest.
Yeah, and that would tell you what if you're at 4?
That would tell me that I better pay attention to what's going on in the structural steel of this bridge. And that was 2 years ago.
Ron Rosenbaum, I'm in for Tommy Mischke, AM 1500 KSTP, 646-825-5187-761-5-1500. 4 out of 9 doesn't sound like a very good score to me. That's why we're going to try to get a little more meaning about what that means. Let's say hello to Ted Huck, who is described as a corrosive engineer. Ted, are you with us?
Yes, I am, Ron. I may be described as corrosive, but actually I'm a corrosion engineer.
Oh, see, Jason, corrosion engineer. We wouldn't describe you as corrosive. How are you? We appreciate you you being with us today. What is this? I have to confess, structurally deficient, in my naivete, sounds bad to me, but we've now heard people say, oh, it's bad, but it's not really bad, and that it doesn't go to the actual structural integrity of the bridge. What does this all mean, Ted?
Well, anytime you evaluate a structure and you make some sort of determination as to what its condition is, rarely do you get a black and white answer. Yes, it's going to fall down at 3 o'clock tomorrow afternoon, or yes, it will last for 50 years. So we always have to give something along a range or scale. Structurally deficient, or 4 out of 9, it doesn't sound great, but it probably doesn't warrant shutting down a major thoroughfare in a large city to do emergency repairs either. I mean, that would be a 1 or a 2. Obviously, the forensic engineers are going to have to go through and do a very detailed study. It's going to take quite a bit of time to determine the actual root cause of this problem, but things fail. Corrosion is a huge issue in this country.
Ted, I've heard this bridge described as a bridge that does not have redundancies, that they don't build them that way, that the idea of redundancies are that the way theoretically I understand it, and you correct me if I'm wrong, but that if one piece fails, others will still hold up the bridge. In this particular design, which apparently is unusual, if one part of this bridge fails, the whole bridge fails. Am I speaking the right language here?
Yes. From what I understand, and again, I'm not a structural engineer, I'm more of a corrosion engineer and deal with the study and science of how to prevent structures from failing, not necessarily in designing them initially. But redundancy is not always possible and not always the most economical way of building a structure. And while it's wonderful to say we'd like to have structures and multiple redundancies and do things the way NASA does things where everything has three fail-safes, in the economic world we live in where you always have a finite number of resources and a lot of needs, you try to do the best and design things as well as you can. This structure, the 40-year-old structure, it had a design life of 70 years. So obviously something has gone wrong and it wasn't picked up, you know, the extent of the corrosion or the damage that had been seen on the metallic structures obviously wasn't picked up well enough during the inspection a couple years ago.
Is it? I've heard talk of vibrations being very dangerous to bridges, that a wind can cause, if it's not properly anchored, can cause a bridge to sort of wave and then collapse, that perhaps a combination, and again, I'm really, you know, way above my pay grade here, but that the hot summer we've had combined with potentially the surface level work that was being done with jackhammers combined with the rush hour traffic, combined with somebody told me that even a freight car could cause vibration below. Are these all things that, when this story is finally written, could very well become relevant to why this happened?
It possibly could. Vibration, and even a freshman engineering student at the University of Minnesota would tell you that rigid structures are much more susceptible to failure than a structure that's designed to have some flexibility. And bridges are designed to flex and move. Now, metal fatigue, which is a process of metal getting cracks in it over time from stresses and expansion and contraction as happens when it gets hot and cold, over time cracks can occur, and I've heard several suppositions that it was metal fatigue, and that was, to be quite honest, my first thought when it was clear there was no earthquake, no terrorist explosion.
Let me stop here for a minute. I've heard that term 50 times. What exactly does metal fatigue mean? I mean, you described it as little cracks. I mean, how does that all play out?
It's very simple. If your listeners could take a spoon and bend it 50 times, you'll start seeing cracks develop in the metal, and that's fatigue.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Now, metals have a modulus of elasticity, how much they can bend without sustaining any damage, and you bend them beyond that, and they start doing damage. Obviously, if you take a spoon and bend it very quickly, you can break that spoon multiple times. Steel girders, on the other hand, first of all, they don't bend as much, and they have, if they're well manufactured, should have a fairly high resistance to bending and to the stresses associated with bending.
This sounds like an odd way of framing it, but could this be the proverbial canary in the coal mine, in that this could be a wake-up call for bridges all over the country, and that our infrastructure is old and perhaps crumbling, and we better take a better look at bridges that are carrying thousands of people every day?
Absolutely. Corrosion is a huge issue in this country, and I'm sure you've had cited and heard cited numerous DOT studies about the tens of thousands of bridges similar to this structure that are at risk, and it's something we've known about for a long time. And it's not just bridges. It could be balconies. We have had numerous disasters where balconies have collapsed and failed. As infrastructure ages, it has to be maintained. There's a lot of technologies out there, and this is what my company does, among others, is implement technologies that will prevent failures. in structures. There's a House bill actually going through the Congress right now. It's H.R. 1770 that provides a tax incentive for private industry to invest in corrosion prevention measures.
Ted, we got about 20 seconds.
Sure.
Okay.
So, yes, it's a huge problem. It's about $30 billion a year, is what a latest study said, is the total cost of corrosion to the United States.
That's more than
our agriculture industry and our mining industry combined.
Well, God willing, we don't need any more of these disasters. Listen, I appreciate you coming on. It's probably no fun this close to a situation like this, but...
our hearts and prayers go out to the people of Minnesota and to the families of those who've suffered.
All right. Well, Ted, thank you very much. We appreciate your expertise and the time you gave us.
Thank you.
Yep. That's Ted Huck, who describes himself as a corrosion engineer.
Not corrosive.
Corrosive, not corrosive. We'll hear a lot more about this. I'm sure Joel will continue with this story. It's really the only story in town. There's 100 angles we didn't get to, but I'm sure they will be covered as the day goes on. Jason, thank you. Excellent work today on very short notice. Tommy, I think we'll be back tomorrow, so stick around for Garage Logic, Ron Rosenbaum, AM 1500. KSDB, St. Paul, Minneapolis, it's now 2 o'clock.
This is Paul Harvey, Jr. In a minute, the rest of the story.
Every day, more than 20,000 children are admitted to children's hospitals across North America. From state-of-the-art care to cutting-edge research and preventative health education...